War, Peace, Children, John Lennon, Death. We'll be talking about all that and a lot more. This is episode number 757 of The Next Step, December 8th, 2022.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to a 15th season of The Next Step podcast with Father Vazgen. With these podcasts, Father Vazgen provides a very distinct and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course, the neophyte. So we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
I don't think you can look too deep. I think when you look too deep, you have a problem there. You start deciphering things that shouldn't be there. Or it's just kind of weird, right? It's kind of weird how certain things just work out, right? I mean, you have that in your life, right? There's things that just kind of work out, even though you weren't planning that way. You weren't planning for it to work out, but it did. And if you kind of look too deep into why it worked out, might get disappointed. It takes the mystery out of it, I guess. I don't know. Well, last Sunday morning, I didn't even tell you. I didn't even tell you, my listeners, that I was going to do this because it had become so routine. So once a year, we get together to celebrate the life of Vahakan Setyan, a young man, 15 years old, who lost his life in, I believe in 2007 or 2006, I think it was. And I got to know him through the love and care of his family and his friends when I was invited. Of all things, I was invited to the Armenian Church in Hollywood at the time, the St. John's. It was our cathedral, actually, at the time, before the new St. Leon was consecrated. And I was invited by the pastor there to come in, delivered the eulogy, because there was such a large number of people and they needed the English language to be spoken. And it's one of those things that don't take a lot of pride in, you know, like everybody comes up to me, "Oh, you speak English so well." Yeah, I was born here, born in America. Ask somebody who's born in England or somewhere else and they'll tell you, "Whoa, American English? No." Now, that doesn't fly. But for most people who hear me in the Armenian church, they get, "Oh." And then they find out that I was born in America. "Oh, well then you speak really good Armenian." Well, yeah, why not? I don't get this. I don't get this thing about the language. I really don't. When you look at most Armenians that live in the diaspora had a life or have a life in a country other than Armenia. Right? I happen to have been born in America. My whole life has been with people who've been born in the Middle East, whether in Syria, in Beirut, in Iran, in Iraq, right? They all speak Armenian, right? They all speak Armenian. But for some reason, because you're born in America, oh man, you really know how to speak. No, it's just the same as anywhere else. You're born in the diaspora, you've got to kind of make an effort to learn it as a language. That's the truth. I don't care where you're at, even in the Middle East. The only legitimate place where Armenian is spoken in that, yes, we speak it in different areas, but in that the government and everything functions because of the Armenian language, and that happens to be Armenia. And even there, during Soviet times, it became very Russified in the sense that much of the language was adopted from Russian or Western words. I remember one of my favorite words that took me a long time to figure out was kultura. And I'm going, "Oh, what is this?" And then they said, "Oh, it means culture." And then once you see it on paper, you go, "Oh, yeah, culture, kultar." Yeah, that's it. Okay, and there's like so many of these things, so many hundreds of these words that they pick up from the West, and they put it with an accent, and they go, "Oh, that's Russian," or that they no, they make it Armenian, you know, gutura, mushaguit is the culture. Anyway, that's another point. I don't want to get into that. I have a real problem with all the language that comes out at us. But what I'm saying is that I was called in to give an English sermon for this young man who had passed away, 15-year-old. And I didn't know what to expect. I got to the church that day, and there were people just hanging out the windows, the doors, so many people, as is the norm for whenever young people have passed away, before their time, outside of their time, what I call untimely, right? We all expect that. Children bury their parents when parents have to bury their kids. That's the abnormality of it, right? And this young man, Vahakin was his name, he had been in a horrible accident, taken his life. And all of a sudden his life, this young life, which was promising. And I just remember that I got to the church there and I realized I got to make this personal, and I quickly listened to what his bio was about. And he loved music. And I didn't hesitate to quote Neil Young, John Lennon in my homily that day. And that was it. But what happened afterwards was really the remarkable thing. In the years since, I've been in touch with the family. As you all know, every December, we have our Inner Shoes Ministries does a children's memorial service. And this goes back to 1997, when I first met the Hamparian family. I had just been assigned as the priest in St. Gregory, Pasadena, and a young girl, 13-year-old, had passed away in an accident. And at that time, there was a group called the Compassionate Friends who had put together a children's memorial, a day to remember children, the second Sunday of December. And this is 1997. I'm the new priest at St. Gregory. I've just met this family who's had this horrible tragedy in their lives. And I find out that then President Clinton had declared that second Sunday as National Children's Memorial Day. And I said, wow, this is beautiful. Why would we not be a participant in this? That first year, we remembered only the young girl, Katya Hamparian. And as the years went on, tragically, we had to include other kids that had passed away, and to the point where right now, this Sunday, we'll be commemorating Children's Memorial Day, and we have just a list that's way too long. Way, way, way too long. And so, you know, my passion for this began when we had lost a child. We had lost a child back in 1985. And I remember how difficult it was to go through that time, especially because we didn't have anything to fall back on. There was no other family. And our whole ministry began in a place, Cupertino, San Jose area. San Jose here in California, just so for those of you away, in California, it's the third largest city. It's a huge, huge city. A decent Armenian population there. And I was assigned to that parish, and we lost our child. And you know, one of the difficult times for us was just being up there alone, Susan and I, and no other family. And of course, we had the parish and lovely, lovely people who came in as family. But there are certain things that, no matter how close the friends are, you know, there's things where you have to fall back. You have to lean on people. That you have a, because here's the deal, when you lose a child, you lose your sense of trust. You've lost the trust in the world, in the system, right? So it was a very difficult time. And one of the things that came out of it that both Susan and I had decided that we would do, that from that point on, anybody who had suffered like this, we knew what it felt like, and we needed to minister to them. We needed to be there. Because one of the most important things about being there is that's it. Listen to this really carefully. If you want to learn about how to be there for grieving people, listen to what I'm saying. Just be there. That's all. Because one of the hardest things for me was just hearing people coming up and giving excuses. Oh, you know, the one that I hated was that, oh, God loved your child, and so he wanted an extra angel in heaven, so he took her. What? I'm sorry, I can laugh about it right now, but what an absurd, absurd idea that somehow God is looking around for little babies and taking them because he needs angels up there. Or others would come and give their diagnosis. What did you do? What did you eat? When, you know, just at some point you have to go with the Zen of the moment and just say, it's happened. It's happened. And now where do we go from here? And so one of the things that we have done is we've tried to minister to families that have had suffered that loss. And so when the Hamparians, we met the Hamparians, we wanted to do this. We wanted to do this children's memorial. And in so doing, it became an opportunity for us to remember our child as well. Because every year when we do it, every year on the second Sunday of December, which happens to be this Sunday, we'll be doing it again. We'll be congregating and we'll be meeting for this candle lighting service. And we have a chance to remember our past as well as the past of so many people, because tragically, as I said, as a priest of 40 years, I've had to do too many of these funerals. There have been funerals that have shaped who I am. Let me say it that way. The tragedy is so great that it has shaped the person that I am. One of the first ones was Ida Safarian, a young girl who was dying of cancer, and I had to sit with her on her deathbed as a young priest and trying to come up with what we call theodicy, and kind of justifying how, if God is good and God is powerful, how could there be evil in the world? Evil such to the point that even children die of cancer. Another one was Saro Balabanian. Another one was Alyssa Biswell. All these kids that just, unfortunately, through my ministry, I've had to be there for them. And what happened is after we did the first children's memorial for Katya, we started adding these names. And in so doing, we kept these people, these young people, alive. And as I began with this last Sunday, I didn't tell you about it because I just expected we were going to go through the usual fare. Every December, early December, the Vahakans family gets together and they honor him with some kind of an activity. It's taken the form of actually a run from Baker to Las Vegas. That's a huge run. And it's a horrible run. It's through the desert. Those of you familiar with that area can attest to that. But they've had 5K walks, runs in the city of Beverly Hills. And it's always worked out great for me because Sunday morning, I get to do my run or my walk with them, and leave in time to make it for Sunday services. Now, this year, what they did is they had a tree planting. And what I started off today to tell you, it's interesting how all of these things come together. Because I said, okay, I'm going to go to the tree planting. They were going to name a grove in the name of Vahakan Setien that morning. I said, let me go there and at least be present for that dedication, and then I could get to church. So I went there, and the mayor of Beverly Hills was there, and of course, Vahagan's parents, and a few people that I have met through the years. But for the most part, it's just a different set of people. Quite different from the one that I had to minister to in that huge church where it was just packed with kids. Many, many kids. And I said, well, you know, there's not many kids here today. And then it occurred to me, wait a minute, what am I talking about? This is like 15, 16 years since the event. And so if Vahakan was alive, he would have been 30 years old. Those kids that were in that church are now 30, 32, 29. They wouldn't be recognized as kids. Let's say it this way, okay? So I'm looking around and they dedicate the park. But Gaudin's father, Vahakan's father, Gaudin, said something very, very beautiful at the dedication. And this is what I was talking about. This is what I meant by it. I wasn't expecting this. And he made a gesture to the tree that they were planting and talking about the continuity of life, that this tree would bring shade to future generations who will never not only not know Vahakan, they would not know any members of the family or any of the intentions with which that tree was planted. Yet, they would be enjoying the shade of that tree. They would be enjoying that the beauty that that grove offered. And in that, Vahakan would live. And it just started clicking in my head. You know, we talk about these terms on personal terms, and they're very difficult. But when you look at it on spiritual terms, we talk about love never dying. What does that mean? Love never dies. If you're filled with love, that love cannot die. And that shadow that will be made by this tree, that shade that will come by this tree, the grove on which the children will be playing. They'll be playing tag. They'll be running around, who have no concept or clue of what this young man was or who was. Will know the love, right? They'll know the love of that beautiful area. And so I got home and I'm preparing for my Monday daily messages on Epostle. How does this all work out? I look at the scriptural passage. Whoa. It's about Jesus talking about the evil in the world. And he says, when these things happen, do not presume that it is God's punishment. Now, I'm saying this because that's really one of those key things that I think is prevalent in a lot of Christianity. I don't know. I don't want to talk for other religions, but I'll tell you, in Christianity, there's a lot of this guilt feeling that somehow I am being punished either for my crimes or the crimes of my fathers or their fathers. And this comes from a lot of the Old Testament. You find this really heavy duty in the Old Testament. Somebody does something and their son, their grandson, their great-grandson has to be punished for it. And you go, what? Wait a minute, hold on. I know, you can go on to karma and all these kind of things, but no, think about it for a moment, right? Think about it. What kind of God is this that would punish because your great-great-grandfather did something horrible? Would punish you or punish your child, your baby. And so I'm reading this and it comes out from Luke chapter 13. Jesus says, do not presume that these people were worse sinners than you are. Instead, repent. In other words, you live the life. You worry about your life. Don't worry about what the purpose or the reasons were for these things. And it's so natural. And so all of a sudden, I was thrown into this role of presenting theodicy. And so all of a sudden, the entire week of podcasts, my daily messages, were about evil. And I got to tell you, it's like been so popular. People have been writing to me, talking to me and asking me about this. And they're thanking me that, you know, nobody really talks about these things. So first of all, thank you for listening. Thank you for following along. But let me tell you, it's a very, very big issue. The problem of evil. Because if you're a Christian, you have some big, big issues to deal with. It is one of the big stories that everybody wants to talk about. The problem of evil is this. If God is good, he wants good things to happen, right? If God is all powerful, he can do everything, right? So how come there's evil? If he wants only good things, why is there evil? Why is his will being counteracted? If he is all powerful, why doesn't he stop evil? Right now, there's a horrible war going on in Ukraine. We're going to talk about it in a few minutes in our second half. Why isn't he doing something about that? I mean, after all, he's all powerful. He could do something about it, but he doesn't. So what's the deal here? He's either not powerful, or he's not a good God, right? He doesn't care about these things. Or maybe evil, is evil really real? Ah, come on, that's philosophical mumbo-jumbo. We know that evil is real. We know that there's evil things in this world. There's war. There's poverty. There's famine. There's sickness, illness, cancer. These are all evils. There is molestation. There's rape. There's child abuse. These are all evil things that take place. Right now, I've got a lady who's in prison. She's in prison because her husband beat her for how many years? You say, why is she in prison? Because she couldn't figure a way out, so she hired somebody to kill him. Wow. Talk about evil, right? Who's evil there? And believe it or not, there's people who say that she's the wrong one for wanting to kill him. There's people who say, well, she's the right one. She should have done it. I mean, both ways, people are looking at it, right? So I spoke about that passage that came to us from Luke chapter 13 in the context of what I had experienced that day, last Sunday. And then things started unfolding. By the time we got to Wednesday, I realized it was the anniversary of the Armenian earthquake. And it occurred to me that, whoa, you know, I've been here for the last 30 years since the earthquake, 34 years. Talking about this evil. Because when the earthquake happened, there was nobody to blame except nature itself, right? Now you've got one where we can point to God and say, wait a minute, why did you do this? What about us being the first Christians? What about our loyalty? What about fighting for the death, for the faith? Doesn't that count for anything? And since it hasn't counted, and we had something like 25 to 50,000 deaths that day during the earthquake, now when you look at it, you have to say, well, what good is a God? Why are we worshiping a God who can't take care of these things, who is not powerful, or whose will isn't being done? And so this entire week, I called it the week of Advent, where we discussed theodicy, an explanation for evil, an understanding of evil, putting together these three concepts. If God is good, if God is all powerful, why is there evil? And it's been therapeutic for me, cathartic, just to produce these shows. So this is available on Epostle. It's an entire series. It began last Monday and it goes through until tomorrow, till Friday's episode. So please check that out. I will have a link on today's show note. But when I come back, we're going to be talking about one priest, who is trying to do something about the evil, the horrendous evil that's taking place in the Ukraine. And I want to share that with you. Right now, what we do is we take a small break every week. We play a song of the day. Give us a little bit of time to absorb what has been said and maybe even digest it if we can. This is my pick for this week. We're getting close to Christmas. It's my time to share my favorites. Enjoy.
So this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, and you won't just be gone. And so this is Christmas. I hope you have fun. The near and the dear ones, the old and the young, a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Let's hope it's a good one without any fear.
So this is Christmas, for weak and for strong, the rich and the poor. So happy Christmas for black and for white, for yellow and red ones. Let's stop all the fights.
A very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Let's
John Lennon, of course. Happy Christmas, the war is over. I had to do this for a couple of reasons. It happens to be the Christmas season, and it reminded me of a horrible Christmas season back in 1980 when we were faced with the reality that John Lennon was shot, that he was no more. It was on this day, December 8th, back in 1980. I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember it so vividly and how incensed we were that this man of peace was shot down, killed. And what the disaster, truly a disaster, that a small little bullet, as well as a small little person, could bring upon not only another life, but upon a culture, upon a people. Add to that that we are in a time where peace is essential, and it's tied in with the war, isn't it? That's what Christmas is about. So let's explore that now as we're coming up, of course, during this Advent time, but on the second half of today's Next Step. I'll have a link on today's show notes to the song, to the album, where you can find it, and all the wonderful music of a legend, John Lennon. We are back for the second portion of today's Next Step. I want to talk to you about what's going on in Ukraine in a different way. You know, I know many of you remember what happened earlier this year when we tried to be supportive of the Ukrainian people. We went out to the Ukrainian church here in Los Angeles, and we stood in solidarity. They were actually selling borscht, believe it or not, to send money back over to the Ukraine to fight against the Russians. It was interesting for me to see some of the reaction that we got from our people, including people that came and said, hey, why are you going and standing with them? Don't you know who they are? And they're people that have been in bed with the Turks. They've been there with the Azeris, and now you're supporting them. Don't you know who these people are? And, you know, you start thinking about it. Wait, who are these people? And who are the Turks? And who are the Ukrainians? Who are the Russians? Aren't they all considered as people, first and foremost? But that conversation never comes up, right? We always want to create these divisions. And you can argue, yeah, that's sort of what builds into pride. And that pride has gotten in the way, as well as has motivated people, has given a sense of worth to people. So there's some delicate balancing acts that we have to do. But in any case, at the beginning of the year, we went and we stood in solidarity with the Ukrainian people. And since that time, we've been bombarded with images that are coming out of Ukraine and coming out of Russia. And namely, that Russian story that's been coming out. We've been presented with pictures, absurd pictures, you know, pictures of, Putin making the sign of the cross and justifying this. Now, you know, here's the story. They tell you that, you know, they don't want the West, Western influences. So they're taking a preemptive strike against Ukraine because that's the border. Now that's their line, they tell us. Or is it? Is it the line that we've been told is their line? You know, there's just so much out there right now that any thinking man has to realize that you've got to kind of distance yourself from everything. And maybe at some point, rather than look at the politics of it, let's look at the humanity of it. This is what I'm saying today. Instead of thinking about, well, whose fault it is, or is it the Ukraine, or let's think about that these are people. When you look at these little soldiers, as was brought home very closely to us in Armenia, the soldiers were just, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. And I guarantee the ones that are fighting out there in the Ukraine are just young kids. They've been sold something. They've been sold a story, a narrative. And they're fighting for it because they think that that narrative is true. That's what people do, right? That's one of the strengths of manipulation, right? You manipulate people to think that they want something, they don't want something. There's billions sold every day. Every day, billions of dollars are exchanged because of this manipulation. In pleasant terms, it's called advertising, right? Right? I mean, look at the most bizarre of all advertisement ventures, right? Coca-Cola, Pepsi. It's sugar water with flavor. Sugar water with flavor. That's it. But you're convinced that you like Coke more than Pepsi. And that there's a difference. I know I could taste the difference. And that it's important to me that I know that there's a difference. I'm somehow convinced of that, right? And the advertising, when you think about billion-dollar cosmetic industry, we're told what is beautiful. And we convince people that this is beautiful. We have a model up there. We parade them around. We call it beauty contests. We call it the Miss America, Miss USA contest. And like it or not, I know there's all these talents and you get to listen to their philosophies on life. Like it or not, the bottom line is how good they look. That's what it comes down to. And now what we're seeing is that people are saying, well, wait a minute. You know, those are just superficial things. Doesn't matter, because we're seeing that, you know, there's people who are getting messed up. hey, I don't look like everybody else. This is like one of the big problems that, especially for me, working with youth in youth ministry, is self-worth, self-identification. And what do you think of yourself? And a lot of it begins with body imaging. What is that image that you have of your body? But now we're saying, hey, it's okay. And we have reality shows now coming out like Lizzo's. What's it called? The Big Girls. The Lizzo. Let me see if I get it. Watch out for the Big Girls with a few R's in there, right? Lizzo. Yeah, very popular because it's okay. It's okay not to be like the model that you see because you are a model. So we play these games. We play these games about who you're created to be. And it all comes down to a lack of our understanding that if we are created in the image of God and that we are precious, that we have to start with that premise, then it's impossible for you to look what would be called ugly. Well, yeah, that's true. That word ugly shouldn't be used. We are all different. And I don't know if you've ever been a fan of The Twilight Zone, but there was one of the wonderful, wonderful episodes, and it was called The Eye of the Beholder. And it was about a group of people who had taken this this person. And the entire thing, I think it's a half an hour long, 20 minutes when you take the commercials into consideration. 20 minutes of this camera on somebody bandaged up. Their entire face is bandaged. And it's a dialogue that you hear among the doctors talking like, okay, you know, we did this. We have given her plastic surgery, and you don't know who's behind the bandages. We're doing everything that we can to make her fit in, to look like us, you know? And so the premise is that you're thinking that, oh, you know, she's some very ugly woman, and and they're going to make her into a beautiful creature to look like everybody else. And if she doesn't, they don't know what to do with her. They're at the end of their rope. And finally, when the bandages do come off, you realize that she's gorgeous. And the people around her are horribly disfigured people. And the idea is that, you know, they're in some other world where this is the norm, the eye of the beholder. What is beautiful for some may not be beautiful for other people. But why do you care what the eye of the beholder is? We care because we've been told that it's important to care. That's what I'm talking about. There's this incredible push, and we call it advertising, conditioning, but billions are spent to condition you to think and do the way that you've been told to do. You got to watch out for this. You got to watch out. This is where it's very important. This is, for me, one of the big strengths of religious life. When you realize that you are a creation of God, that you don't need all of the other people to justify or validate your existence, you turn out better. You turn out stronger. In the case of drugs, for instance, you know, why would you take drugs? Why in the world would you take drugs? You take it because you want to perhaps fit in. Perhaps because it makes you feel good, something that we don't like to admit. But drugs do make people feel good. And so you feel good until you're at a point where you're addicted to something. And something foreign is in your body. And one of the things that I credit my faith with, that I never got into drugs, was that it's the basic understanding that if God has created you, you're created in his image. Why would you pollute it with garbage, putting garbage into your system that is going to alter that beautiful personality that God has given you? Imagine if everybody understood themselves as having a beautiful personality. Some are quiet, some are loud, some are obnoxious, some are kind. But it's all part of this beautiful system that we call our life. And so I always used to talk to kids about the drugs, not in the case of, not about saying, hey, it's horrible, you're going to get addicted. Because, you know, at first try, they always say, oh, it was great, made me feel really good. Okay, so let's get beyond that. How about talking about just why would you need something foreign to change what God has given you? But that begins with the premise that you believe that a God has given you that. Has given you something very special and unique that is not a detriment to who you are, but defines who you are. And that's where it's not easy. I'm not pretending it's easy. We are bombarded, like I said, by Madison Avenue, by advertising that tells us that this is a good way to live. This is what you should look like. And then we expect the preacher to sit up and say, okay, well, God loves you. You're created in the image of God. So you're going to be free from these wants, these desires. No, it doesn't work that way. It's not that easy. But it can happen when we all start understanding ourselves, understanding how much pressure is being put on us from the outside sources. The same is true in Ukraine. We're getting a story. We're getting a story that's being told to us by different people. And you have to sit back and kind of look at it and kind of use your own power of reason and say, first of all, what can I do to influence this? How can I change this? Where is my personal history? That's where I always start off with. When I look at somebody in Ukraine, when I look at the fighting in there, I always put it on ourselves. What were Armenians like when the world had turned its head away, when the Turks were killing us during the genocide? There was so much being written in the New York Times. And there's documentation of that until today. In fact, I've seen books, huge, huge volumes. New York Times, Christian Science Monitor, these old, old newspapers. Clips, stories about what's taking place in Armenia. Genocide. Yeah, that word didn't even exist, but they were describing it. A mandate to kill everyone who is Armenian. And so when you look at that back in 1915, and then you're sitting here today and you're looking at what's going on in Ukraine, you say, well, what can I do about it? And there is something that can be done, and it begins with our church. It begins with faith. It begins with understanding that we are created in the image of God, and that so is everyone else. But that's dangerous. That's dangerous to believe in that. And that's why I started off this segment with the story of what happened earlier this year when we went and we stood in solidarity with the Ukrainians. People said, hey, don't you know who those people are? Yes, I do know who they are. They're people. They're children. They're kids. Creations of God. And this is what happened to a priest. This is in the New York Times, and I'm going to place a link on today's show notes so you can check it out. It's called Putin versus the Priest, a big story about a small sermon. This is a Russian Orthodox priest who is serving in a small little area in Russia. And when the war began, which they don't call a war, some kind of military action, but whatever, whenever the fighting began, whenever the war began, let's just be upfront with it, whenever the war began, he looked at it and he said that this isn't right. Now, you got to remember that in churches such as ours, Orthodox churches, such as the Roman Catholic, such as the traditional churches, and one of the appeals for Protestantism is that they are not like this, but then that opens the door for a whole bunch of other stuff. But one of the things for Orthodox Christians is that there is a hierarchy. There is a branch in the church. It's not like you've just gotten a Bible and you could sit there and interpret it. There is an entire hierarchy there. And the head of the Russian Orthodox Church, Kirill, he's come out and said that, you know, this is okay. Go into Ukraine and kill them. It's okay to kill people. And of course, we have a problem with that, right? Especially if you're a Christian. Especially if you're a Christian. but he's the head of the Christian state. He's the head of 1 million people who identify themselves under the Russian Orthodox Church. Interesting, huh? One of his priests gets up and says, wait a minute, I can't accept that. I can't buy that. And so there is an editorial, it's a video editorial actually. It's called Putin versus the Priest, a big story about a small sermon. This priest gets up and makes a sermon, gives a sermon, delivers a sermon against the war, against this aggression, against the aggression against a people for whom there's no reason to have that aggression. And he's called out on it. He's called out on it by his church. And everything that he has as a priest is lost. And you know, what we're seeing here, and I'm going to really encourage you to watch this video. It's what, all of 10, if not 12 minutes long. It's a very nicely done little video. It'll give you some background of some of the moral dilemmas that people are faced with in the face of war. It's not just over there, it's all over. Man's inhumanity to man is something that we as Armenians need to be testifying to. And sadly, we're not. Apart from In His Shoes, there's nobody else talking about it. There is nobody else talking about this when you realize that this is exactly what happened in 1915. Yes, it's exactly what happened. We get all hung up about definitions like genocide and everything. What is going on in Ukraine? It's if you're Ukrainian, you get killed. Okay, what? Now what? Something escapes me, right? Something escapes me. How we cannot identify with that. If you're Armenian, you're dead. That's what the edict was in 1915. That's how simple it is. We get hung up on the classification of genocide, which is something that came up in the 1940s, and then we stuck that on that we are the first people to go through genocide in the 20th century. Well, yes, because now it's defined and there's a word for it. We didn't have a word for it before. Now we have a word. And then we get into the semantics and all that. Is it genocide? Is it not genocide and everything? But is it wrong? That question is a tough one. It's something that as a priest, this man, this young Russian Orthodox priest, said, yes, what we're doing is wrong. We're not defending ourselves. We're just sitting there going out after people who want to just sit there and be people. And like all wars, it's always these poor innocent people that get hung up on it, that have to bear the brunt of it. This is very close to me, and it should be to every Armenian, because we have gone through this. In 2020, we were just sitting there when the Azeris just decided that, okay, we're coming in. We're taking the land. Okay, we're coming in. And these structures that have crosses on them, well, that's an illusion. And this really is something that's that's Azeri. And they start bombing these things. They start bombing people because they are Armenian. I mean, the similarities, the parallels are all there. And we haven't woken up that if we're going to be talking in this world, we've got to talk beyond ourselves. We've got to be talking about everything. That's what Epostle is all about. If we have a voice in Armadoxy, if Armadoxy is a voice of Christianity for the oppressed, for the hurting, for the people who have gone through genocide, then we understand that we have an obligation, a responsibility to the rest of the world. And I got to tell you, seeing this video inspired me beyond where I've been inspired, because I realize what we've been doing for these several years in the form of In His Shoes, what we inaugurated as Epostle, is so vital and so important to be that voice out there, the voice out in the wilderness, that will be pointing people and saying that, yes, this is wrong. There are things that are wrong, that are unacceptable. I've told you this. I've told you this before. To me, there is one moral absolute. I've tried to think about it through my life. There are many things that are you can justify. We've justified killing too, right, in the form of defense. We've justified lying for the sake of a greater good. We've justified all kinds of things. The one thing that you cannot justify is rape. Imposing your will upon somebody else. Annihilating somebody because it's your will. And the rape, whether it's a human being, it's a country, it's a land, it's a home, it's a place, is the same. You have decided that your life is worth more than theirs. Your pleasure is worth more than theirs. And so you've got to get out there and kill that person. And that's unacceptable. It's unacceptable, yes, by God's standards, but it has to be unacceptable by human standards too. That's where the tragedy is. We keep looking up instead of sideways. We keep looking up and saying, oh God, is this okay? Instead of looking at one another and saying, is it all right? Of course not. And that's why Jesus' message is so pertinent today. Treat others the way you would want them to treat you. Do you want somebody to come in and bomb your parents, bomb your kids, and kill them? Then don't do it to others. That's how simple it is. And this message is the message of peace that Jesus came and talked about. This message of peace is what he came for. It was the message for which the angels heralded peace on earth, goodwill towards one another. And we're standing here in the 21st century, still talking about obsolete methods of resolving issues, namely by fighting and by killing. Look, we are in the period of Advent. Make this a period that you grow spiritually, that you become an instrument of peace, so that it's not just about other people doing things, but you are part of that process. I can't impress this enough, that a Christian needs to take on responsibility. If the kingdom of God is within us, it means we are part of a kingdom. Kingdom doesn't mean, hey, look at me, I'm riding high. No, a king is responsible. A king is responsible for people, for his people. And who are his people? Who are our people? Our people is humanity. Our people are people. Yes, it's beautiful that I'm Armenian. It's beautiful that you're Mexican. It's beautiful that you're French. It's beautiful that you're Italian. It's beautiful that your people come from Africa, that you're from the Middle East. It's beautiful. You have all kinds of heritages and cultures, cultura, that you can adapt to and share. That's beautiful. But at the bottom of it all is that we're human. And that sounds so elementary that it almost sounds funny. It sounds corny. It sounds used. Do you know what today is? December 8th, the day that John Lennon died. He was killed. He was a man who talked about peace and was killed violently. If for nothing else, today, listen to the simple message that he talks about. The quest for peace. It's the same message Jesus talked about. I once got into trouble one place where I gave a sermon and dared to bring up the name of John Lennon. How dare you bring up that man's name in a church while talking about Jesus? That was Jesus, wasn't it? Right? He'd lend his name to anybody who talked about peace. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Not my words, the words of Jesus Christ. Think about it. It's Christmas. Advent, preparing for Christmas. Think about the gifts we're giving. And think about that. The gift of peace.
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The next step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, there you have it. There's your instruction. And you know what? I have to share with you that this past few weeks on Epostle has been so exciting, dynamic, stimulating for me personally. And I want to thank you all for the wonderful comments that you've been sending me, the notes and messages. I really, really appreciate them. This coming Sunday, I'm going to be at the St. Leon Cathedral celebrating Divine Liturgy. The scriptural passage, I believe it's Luke chapter 14, it is my ultimate favorite because it sets the tone of really what Christmas is all about. It's not about mangers. I'll give you a hint. It's not about mangers. It's not about Bethlehem. It's not about shepherds in the field. It's not about stars in the sky. It's about the real message there. So join me this Sunday. I'll have a link on today's show notes. It's usually streamed on the Diocesan Facebook page. So I'll have a small little link there, and I'd love it if you could join us. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. I hope you enjoyed it. It was a little bit different to tell you about how we get from place to place and end up with peace. And I can't impress upon you enough how important it is that we get the message. In fact, everything that we do in Epostle is about promoting our In Issues message, which is ultimately about defining peace through our interactions, our responsibilities to one another and to our planet, and ultimately, in so doing, our responsibilities to God. So that's it, in a nutshell, okay? Hey, some exciting things coming up. I met with Gregory Baylarian yesterday, and we are doing a trip. It's going to be our trip on the road. And so look for promos coming up. And of course, catch us all week long on epostle.net, on our Facebook page and Instagram account. Listen, on behalf of the wonderful team that put together today's show, Susie, my producer, and myself, this is Father Vazgen, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
Stand by for disclaimer.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of Epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Epostle.net.
Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe.
Forgot to ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are. Bye.